This is the KPTZ Compass, your local news magazine for the Northeast Olympic Peninsula. This summer, a unique sight graced the Point Hudson Marina. It was a tall ship, a replica of a Thames River sailing barge. At each destination, Caravan Stage Company, a nomadic group of performers from all over the world, transformed the 21-foot-wide, 90-foot-long deck into a technologically innovative contemporary theater space. In this two-part series, KPTZ DJ and reporter Chris Bricker explores the evolution of the company from its roots to its current manifestation and listens to the stories that spill from the hold of the ship called the Amara Z. So now let's go inside the compass.
Created in 1970 by Paul Kirby and Adriana Kelder, the Caravan Stage Company started as a one-wagon puppet show traveling on Vancouver Island. It grew to become a major theatrical organization with a 25-person company of actors, musicians, artists, technicians, touring on six large wagons, each one pulled by a team of matched bay Clydesdales. Their mission? To bring original theatrical productions directly into the lives of people who seldom had the opportunity to experience the performing arts. For the past number of years, Caravan Stage has taken to the water, and last summer, the Caravan visited Port Townsend's Point Hudson. In part one of a two-part Compass series, Paul Kirby and Adriana Nans Kelder tell the story of the Caravan's evolution to its current theater of choice, a seagoing 30-meter-long replica of a River Thames barge.
Scotty, walk now. Why horses? Because they're slow. And I like slow things. Scotty. The main reason for the horses, actually, though, is that we can arrive in a town with a bit of magic. We can arrive announced like a herald. In the old days, when the circus was coming, it was all horse-drawn. The kids would run through the town yelling, "The circus is coming! The circus is coming!" So that's the way we want to arrive.
You created this endeavor back in what, 1970, if I remember correctly?
I was 24, and my partner, Adriana, was 22. We were given a one-way ride out of Montreal because of our theatrical journalism there. We were publishing an underground newspaper called Logos, and those were in the heady days of the late 60s. In the process, we decided to come out west and start a traveling troupe, originally going to travel in buses and various Volkswagen vans and things like that. But fortunately, these vehicles that we started traveling west on all broke down. And so we came up with the idea of traveling with horses and wagons, which never break down.
Oh, the days of naivete, right? So they
well, it's true. They never did break down. And, you know, it was incredible because, of course, getting to town was a three-day affair for, you know, maybe 40 miles or something like that. We developed our audience as we went. The word of mouth traveled faster than we did. That was the thing that created the audience everywhere we went. We filled our tent and we were able to do the kind of shows we wanted to do. And it was really, it was very exciting and, you know, very captivating for a lot of people.
How big was the tent? How many people could you seat in your tent?
It was a beautiful tent. We designed it ourselves. It was a tensile tent, and it had no poles on the inside. Everything was held up by poles on the outside. We could get about 725 people in that tent.
So did you and Adriana know anything about horses before you decided you were going to pull the show down the road with Percherons?
We knew they smelled really good, and they were beautiful to look at. They were Clydesdales, actually. But we, you know, we did actually spend 2 years teaching ourselves, also finding a lot of old-timers that taught us quite a bit, actually. You know, we logged with the horses, we plowed with the horses, we drove a lot of different implements. So when we finally went on the road, we were quite adept at driving teams and riding horses.
Nothing like the elders to show you the way.
Always, always.
I can also imagine the people in the communities that are linked together calling one another and saying, get out on your front porch because you're not going to believe what's going by here.
We actually directed traffic around us, so we didn't, you know, it was too dangerous actually to go on the side of the road. And so even traveling down the road, we'd have, you know, every 10 minutes we'd have about 50, sometimes 100 cars traveling by us, and we had signs and everything, and they knew where we were going. But then, like I said, it would take 3 to 4 days to get to the next town, and we would stay overnight. I'm usually in a farmer's field, and of course, Adrienne would get on her horse and ride ahead of the whole caravan and ask a few of her friends to come for the night. So we'd pull up into a farmer's field, and there inevitably there'd be another 20 people because they would phone all their neighbors. And then by the time we were sitting down for supper, which is usually pretty dark, there was upwards of 30, 40 people there that would gather around, and we'd tell stories, and they'd tell us stories, and then we'd see them all at the show.
Did you have the usual number of kids show up that wanted to help?
Well, those in the days when we actually had a lot of kids traveling with us, our own kids.
Yeah.
And we did have a number of people try to run away with us, and sometimes we let them. You know, there's an amazing story by a tapestry artist who unfortunately passed away, but his name is Jan Yors, and he was, I think he was about 12 when he decided to run away on his own with the gypsies in Europe. His parents, being somewhat enlightened at the time, decided to let him go. And he spent the better part of his youth traveling with these people. A very rich experience. It influenced his work as an artist. Eventually he wrote a book, trying to remember the name of the book, but it's something with a gypsy in the title, and it's by Jan Yors, and it's all about traveling with the Rom, as they were called, and the horsemanship and the kind of the ways they created to survive in a what they called a gagey world.
Well, I was a runaway, but I was much older. I didn't have to ask my parents.
Okay.
It's a whole story.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Campfire stories.
Right? Yeah, that's exactly right.
Okay.
Well, see, now, campfire stories. You can't have campfire stories around the ship, so what do you do?
Well, you know, we... So one thing that we really missed was a fire, because we used to cook on the fire every night, and even when we were in a show site. Adriana designed a beautiful salon, and it's just a very open space with a low table that you sit at by sitting on cushions on the floor. And there's a symbolic fire always in the middle of the table. And that's the storytelling table. And we invite people to come to the ship and partake in the food and the glee.
That's wonderful. So tell me about the transition.
It's a bit of a journey in terms of our selection of that particular vessel. When we first started out, we, of course, were looking at these beautiful schooners. There's one down in the harbor there at Point Hudson that is almost identical to what we were looking at. We soon realized that, you know, the kind of theater that we do, all these masts and booms and gaffs in the way of presenting the show and using the deck as a show. And at the time, we were on Wolf Island in Kingston, Ontario, and there was a sailmaker there who was from England. And then there was also a marine surveyor, engineer. And they were fans of our work because we were actually presenting shows there. And they came up to us one day and said, look, you know, we want to help you build this vessel that you want to build. At the time, we actually didn't realize we wanted to build a vessel. We were looking for something. And they said, we've got the one that you should build. And knowing what they knew exactly what we wanted to do. So they presented us with a little mock-up. They actually built a little model of a Thames River barge. And sure enough, it's incredible. You know, the rigging is unique. We don't have to move anything. So it's a spreet sail barge. You know, and the other incredible thing about it is that we can lower everything. We can lower those masts and go under bridges. Like we sailed the Danube in Europe, which was an amazing journey, but we sailed all the way down the Danube. And we had to lower the mast every time we finished the shows, get to the next site, and then put all the masts back up, and then put all the show rigging back up. But the way we can lower everything ourselves and get into places that we would never get to. And that's a very shallow draft vessel, only draws 5 feet, and yet it's 90 feet long, and it has almost a 22-foot beam.
Yeah, I was looking at that, and you're right, it is a shallow draft, and it's pretty fascinating. I was trying to imagine that out on the high seas and what that's like.
Well, on the high seas. Well,
high seas. You know what I mean.
Well, we've traveled, I think, almost six of the seven. For our ship, our particular Thames barge, we can't go in anything more than about a force five to be safe. And so we don't. We take our adventure in the theater and not in the sailing. You know, we have been caught in a number of storms, but she came through for us. And it's, you know, it's a rocky ride.
How does the company fare?
There's always a lot of gravel on the ship and a lot of ginger ale, Canada dry ginger ale. And there's another story there. Anyways, no, they do very well. I mean, we're blessed as a community. I mean, first and foremost, it was sort of really our community of artists, both technical and performance and mechanical and, you know, every other level. So we strive very, very diligently to create a strong community bond. And that's what makes the caravan what it is. It's really a community of artists that are traveling off the waves.
You know, that reminds me of my first impression of the circus. You know, I was actually, you talk about coming full circle, I was doing some radio work when the circus came to town, and so I went up to do interviews, and one of the things that fascinated me was, is that here was the mailman, you know, he was the bus driver, he was the mailman, standing on top of an elephant tub handing out mail to to performers in all different stages of dress.
Yeah, yeah.
And I said to myself, well, wait a minute, here's a small town. You know, all the good things and the bad things about a small town.
Yeah.
Traveling through everybody else's town.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't know, for some reason, you know, Einstein's theory of relativity came to mind, but I mean, that always fascinated me, because the amount of ground and territory and people and communities that you encounter as a performing troupe happens in a relatively short amount of time compared to the normal year or the normal couple of seasons that a stationary community goes through.
Yeah.
I don't know how to express that better than that, but it's just fascinating to me.
You know, there's a, I'm going to refer to you to another book. This one I do know the title of. It's called Songlines. And it's all about the distinction between a sedentary life and a nomadic life, and which, of course, the nomadic way of life is severely endangered these days, although there's sort of a new virtual electronic nomadic life. But the beauty of this is that you actually create, as you travel, you create song lines. And the world is created around you as you travel. That's a blessing. You can't really come up with, in our perspective, you can't come up with a better way of living than being nomadic. But it is something that, you know, we don't encourage everybody to do it. We don't proselytize about that or anything. It's just, it's something that you have to really enjoy, because there's, you know, handfuls, more than handfuls, fistfuls of trepidation and concern and stress and all that kind of stuff with it. But
it's got to be in your blood. And,
yeah.
And,
yeah.
You may go through some rough patches, but for some reason you just come back for more, and it just feeds your soul.
It does. I mean, there's a horizon there that you constantly are striving to get to. And that's artistically as well. I mean, we have set the horizon a long way off for ourselves artistically. And
yeah,
every show, you know, we go for it with everything we can, with full gusto. We think we make it, but then, you know, when the next one comes up, the horizon's further away. I, together with my partner, Adriana, who is my muse and writing editor.
You've been together a long time.
Long time,
I saw a picture here of you two, and it's quite striking. It says a lot about your relationship.
Yeah, yeah. Extraordinary person. She sort of leads me down the path, yeah. So the show is called Nomadic Tempest, and not to be confused with Shakespeare's Tempest. And it's all about climate change, and it's set in 2040, 22 years from now, when the effects of climate change have become quite devastating, quite severe, and resulted in a vast number of migrants. Matter of fact, I was reading late last night an article in The Guardian about the number of migrants that currently are on the path, and there's over 250 million people who are right now homeless and traveling to avoid either catastrophes caused by climate change or by war and violence. It's a staggering number of people. It's triple the number of people that they thought would be migrants. And the number of people that are going to be migrants as the years pass, unless we do something about the consumption of fossil fuels, is going to be even triple that. It's a very, very entertaining show. It's all sung with original music and a lot of spectacle, a lot of interesting video, both graphically and cinematographically. Great lights, very interesting sound. So it's a delightful spectacle that people can sit back and be enthralled by, but it does carry the message of the fact that we are facing a global crisis here brought on by the rapid consumption of fossil fuels, and we have to make a shift in order to save the planet, the species, and ourselves.
Is the whole troupe Canadian, or are they from different parts of the world?
No, and that's one of the really beautiful things about the caravan is that the troupe is from many different countries around the world. We have people from Mexico, from Spain, from Germany, from France, from Ireland, from the United States, and from Canada.
Paul Kirby, thank you so much for coming by today. The Amara Z.
Yeah.
And how did that name come about?
That means the sea goddess. Amara is our own sea goddess. So that's where the term came from.
Well, thank you, Paul. I'm looking forward to meeting your longtime partner and also the rest of the crew. And so that is the Caravan Stage Company. And the name of the production is?
Nomadic Tempest.
Nomadic Tempest. And happening right here in our town, the town that time forgot.
It's always good to move on, to get to the next town. To keep moving. And I think that's why we've lasted as long as we have. The sail revitalizes the crew. They get invigorated by being on the water, the movement. And just going to a new place is always exciting. My name is Nons, but legally my name is Adriana Kelder, and Paul and I started the company 48 years ago.
You started with one horse and one cart, and now here you are on a replica of a Thames barge. How did that come about?
We built the ship, so that's how we ended up on the ship. We decided after 20 years of traveling with horses and wagons that it was tiring. It was exhausting work, and we wanted to go further afield, travel to places where a horse and a wagon can't go. We said, well, let's build a ship. Well, we first tried to get one donated, and that was not so successful. A regular ship, sailing vessel, you can't just turn into a theater ship. So we got talked into building one.
So there was some research involved, I'm sure, but what made you choose a replica of a Thames barge?
We were heavily influenced by two Brits out in Kingston, Ontario in Canada, who kept on saying, go for this style of vessel because she's flat bottom, which means she's shallow draft, can go close to shore. She has a spreet and not a boom, which you have to remove to get to the stage. And she has a large capacity down below. And we can lower the masts to go under bridges manually. So they're tabernacled. So we can go from a mast that's 90 feet in the air to almost nil height. And we have done that in the past to get under bridges.
Paul was mentioning that you actually went down the Danube, and you couldn't have done it in a different vessel.
No, we would have gotten stuck, and we'd still be there. Well, it wasn't the bridges so much as that the water just is fluctuating. Always it goes down when it's dry, and there's no tide. So you can't rely on the currents or the tides to get out of a muddy situation. And we saw a lot of wrecks along the Danube.
Here we are sitting on this ship, and the ship is how old now?
She's 21. Well, if you consider when we launched her. So we launched her in 97.
And she was built where?
Kingston, Ontario. It took us 4 years to build her.
Did you have sailing experience before you decided to build this ship?
Paul did. He'd sailed as a young lad, but on smaller vessels, and I'd had none. But we have nomad blood. Can't sit still, so it suited both of our temperaments.
How did you cover the cost of getting this built?
We realized that the money we'd raised from selling horses and wagons, because we'd had about 5 wagons and many teams of Clydesdales left over from the Horse Drawn era, and that money quickly went. So we realized we had to raise the money ourselves. We had to get sponsors to donate materials to get it done. And then we did get some help from the Canadian government providing labor costs. We did get a lot of U.S. sponsors, corporations who really liked the idea and got behind the project right away. There's something about boats that really catches people's fancy. And the idea that we project their logo and promote them as well along our journeys really catches a lot of CEOs of big companies.
Logistics. Are you the logistics guru for this outfit, or how does that work?
Well, Paul and I do this together, and it is a major headache constantly but it's what we choose to do. We don't stay in one place. So our logistics are constantly changing, and we have to adjust, and you have to improvise a lot. And that's where our theatrical background comes in handy.
Your experience over the 40-some years that you've been vagabonds and thespians and vaudevillians and however else you would like to describe yourselves, what's been the most salient experience that you and Paul have had over the years, if there was one that you could pick out?
Our times with the caravan are sort of divided into two, the ones with the horses and wagons and the ones with the ship. And the ones with the horses and wagons are getting, of course, they're getting more distant, but they were special because we were younger. We were definitely felt like pioneering the West, and it was very much a Western thing. And that was one of the things we realized when we brought the horse and wagons to the East Coast, that it wasn't the same. That's when we switched to building a ship. I think the journey, as far as with the ship, the journey going through the Danube was the most exciting for us, because we had to make it up all the way, because sites that we had arranged to do the shows were either they disappeared, mainly because of the drought at the time. And so we had to, okay, this looks like a possible site, let's make it happen. So, I mean, that's the kind of things that I think that still excites us, is just doing it on the fly.
After my own heart. Nan, it was a pleasure to talk with you. Such a pleasure.
Thank you, Chris. It's a pleasure to talk to you and to the people on your radio.
We're glad you enjoyed yourself. Thank you for coming. And we hope that you'll tell all your friends. And we hope that we may see you again, which should be the following year. Okay?
In the final installment of our two-part series on the caravan stage, we'll visit the company's performers and technicians in the salon of the Amara Z as they share their stories and experiences aboard their tall ship, their home, and their stage during their tour of Nomadic Tempest. Until then, this is Chris Bricker for KPTZ Community Radio News. Additional historical sound clips came from Canadian Film Board documentary footage.
This week's KPTZ Compass was written and produced by Chris Bricker and executive producer Steve Evans. The Compass airs Mondays at noon and 5 p.m. and repeats the following Saturday at noon. You can listen to podcasts of past Compass programs at the kptz.org website, where you can also stream KPTZ live 24 hours a day. Special thanks to Pat Rogers for making this happen week after week. For the news team here at KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, I'm Steve Evans.